Dara here. I missed you all. All right, so here's the plan. We are going to take this live White House briefing when somebody gets to the podium. But in the meantime, there's nobody there. We're keeping an eye. I can see it right in front of me. There's nobody at this podium, so we're going to do our regular show until the very second someone gets there, and then we're going to take the live briefing because this is a time of coronavirus, COVID-19 panic. And we are here to be calm and to be all together and to kind of make our way through this. So here's the story. I have Pilar Gerasimo here. You know Pilar. She's one of my very good friends. She is the person that I turn to when I am personally panicking. She wrote a book for the whole wide world called Healthy Deviant, healthydeviant.com, to kind of put her perspective as someone who has been in the middle of food, nutrition, health, wellness for her whole career. She started Experience Life magazine and the book Healthy Deviant. And now we're going to do what I do in my personal life. All right, Pilar, let's talk about the very nature of panic. What is it? Panic, I feel like, is when you kind of look at the whole system and you say, oh, my goodness, I'm in danger.
Yeah, it is. The sense I get from people is that feeling of high responsibility and low control that leads to stress, where you want to take care of yourself and other people. You don't know quite what to do. Everyone seems to be running around, you know, amassing a lot of toilet paper and hand sanitizer and then looking at each other and saying, what do we do now?
And then they get angry at each other, like, why are you doing that? And then they're like, oh. And then there's this whole kind of second order effects of people anxiously bickering and judging each other. And not helpful.
Yeah, whenever we feel afraid, all of our responses get more amplified. And we tend to be shorter fused. We tend to be more reactive, even to the smallest little things. And I think right now there's sort of a first phase of you know, a state of peacetime emergency where people, you know, they jump in and they do things that are helpful, sometimes for each other, for themselves. They clean their houses. They get their stuff organized in their refrigerator. And then there's a moment where people, I think, start to realize that there's not a lot more they think, at least, that they can do. And often then that energy just goes down bad avenues and people just start worrying and not sleeping well, or getting angry at each other. Being shut in the house with a bunch of people sometimes doesn't help.
Getting angry at each other on Facebook, getting angry at each other on Twitter, getting angry at each other in your office for too many emails. Like it's a thing though, because on the one hand, we certainly can't underestimate the troubles that are happening. Coronavirus is serious. We have to, as a community, respond with measure and calm. Measure and calm is like the first thing that goes out the window when you're freaking out.
I think one of the most important things to keep in mind is that there's the stuff you can do, the stuff you can control, and then there's the stuff you can't. Now, this is considered a pandemic, which means it's out in the wild. We know it's a virulent, novel, contagious virus. We know that it's quite deadly by, you know, I guess, typical contagious disease standards, but less deadly than a lot of the previous pandemics. You know, SARS had a higher death rate. MERS did too, I believe. But the things that you can't control are the fact that it's out there. The things you can control to some extent are your exposure to it. You can do all of the common sense hygiene practices that we've heard a lot of experts talk about, reduce contact, reduce exposure to the germ, the virus itself. Then comes the whole second level, though, of how do you improve your resilience and your vitality and improve your general immunity to this and other infectious agents? Because guess what? Your general level of health and vitality is proving to be one of the most important factors in whether not just you contract this virus, but what your effects, the effects on your body are and your chances of survival of it.
Okay, so let's kind of break that down. So a lot of people are, you know, there's a certain thing that's happening on Twitter where people are like, don't share, you know, stupid health information. Like, we're not going to share stupid health information, but let's talk about something super basic that I know you are an expert on, which is sleep. So if you're going into any kind of situation, if you have to choose between going into it well-rested versus stayed up all night freaking out on the internet, like the well-rested is where you want to go. So let's talk about the science behind that. Sleep. I feel like, you know, I always tell people if there's one thing you can do on your weight loss journey or whatever. You're like, sleep is a real thing. Let's talk about sleep.
Yes. Well, many experts would suggest it's probably the single most important factor in both short-term and long-term health and vitality and well-being. And I want to make the point that I start the book, my book, The Healthy Deviant, with a very simple science-based thesis, namely that faced with any serious high-stress challenge, an aware, energized, resilient person stands a much better chance of coping than a distracted, depleted, and fragile one. And when we don't sleep, we become distracted, depleted, and fragile. Our immunity suffers almost immediately, even after one bad night's sleep. But after extended periods of sleep deprivation, we see immune system changes that are really quite considerable. And your inflammation generally rises, which means your immune system gets focused on those kinds of unrepaired pieces of damage that result from inflammation. And there's less of its available mojo to go to work fighting things like infectious agents.
We're doing off the menu coronavirus panic edition because I mainly don't want to panic. It's not good for me. It's not good for you. It's not good for the society. I am always and I am currently very interested in just how to be healthy. And I'm going to say in an unhealthy world because I'm looking at Pilar. Pilar Gerasimo is one of my dear friends, wrote the book Healthy Deviant. And that is her motto. That's her way of being has been this how to be healthy in an unhealthy world. More relevant than ever. You're on message, girl. All right. So part of the reason I wanted to have you in is to just kind of talk about this baseline health, baseline immune system, sleep. You know, you don't want to go into any terrible situation. You don't want to go into a foxhole. You don't want to go into a big board meeting. You don't want to go into a presentation, you know, in the sixth grade without sleep. Sleep is. But then there's a thing in the culture that tells you, oh, no, you know, anything you can do at home is terrible and small and will not affect us whatsoever. But no, immunity and sleep. And then I want to talk about the next thing. You know, ton about hydration. Hydration, it's not nothing. It's a real thing. Talk about it.
Okay. Well, first of all, you're absolutely right that I think people make the assumption that if it doesn't come out of a syringe or in a pill form, it's not a real health change agent. And the truth is health and baseline vitality, as I mentioned before we took the break, are some of the most significant factors, according to research scientists, in both your chances of contracting any infectious disease versus having your immune system fight it off in the first place, as well as the severity of the symptoms that you have and whether they put you at risk for what they call a poor outcome, like being hospitalized, put on a ventilator, or dying. So it's not to say that healthy people can't get sick from this coronavirus. They can, and they will, and they are. However, they are standing a much better chance of surviving on the basis of all of the baseline things that they did, the way they ate, the way they slept, how well hydrated they were, and how they built their immune system over time. So the good news is, for people who are already doing healthy things and you already have healthy habits, keep doing those things. This is not the time to stay up late watching the news and blowing up your sleep habit. It's not the time to start drinking extra alcohol because you're stressed and blowing up your healthy hydration. Drinking water, eating healthy, high nutrient-dense whole foods, and avoiding garbage and fast food and sugar and all the things that irritate our systems, getting enough sleep. These sound like basic, simple things to do, and they are, but they're incredibly powerful things to do to bring your baseline immunity and resilience up, which gives you a much better chance of getting through this unscathed, as well as of being some use to the people around you. Because a bunch of panicked people and depleted people and fragile people is the last thing we need more of right now.
Yeah. And then kind of walk people through, if they've forgotten or they didn't know to begin with, the general idea that you've been talking about in your book, Healthy Deviant, and your whole life is sugar creates an inflammation response. What is inflammation and immunity, and how do those two work together?
Well, the simplest way to describe it, in my book, I call it, I use a slightly more adult term, but ticked off body syndrome. Whatever you do that makes your body irritated physically, inflamed, that's what really inflammation is a response to damage or irritation, that will send a whole downstream set of chemical effects into place. Many of the things that happen when we become inflamed, The biochemical effects are that it calls on our immune system to repair the damage that's been done. And now our immune system is activated, but it's also distracted, dealing with the day-to-day damage that we're doing by inflammatory foods. You mentioned sugar, which is definitely a high inflammation food. So are processed flours. So are inflammatory industrial oils, trans fats being the primary culprit, but also a lot of the stuff that you see in a vegetable oil jar these days. That stuff is inflammatory. It's processed in ways our bodies don't know how to deal with. And you put garbage into your system goes into a high alert, immune active mode, trying to deal with what it perceives as an invader, as a series of bad agents running around, running amok in your body, doing damage. When we're facing a situation like this one, where we have a contagious disease at work in our environment, your base level of immunity is really becomes even more important than it is on a day-to-day basis. And I want to emphasize that while good immunity is built over the course of a lifetime, you know, the things you do day-to-day, year in, year out, make a big difference. You can make a significant difference in the quality of your immune function, even in the course of a given day. They've done some research that shows a single meal, like a fast food meal from one of, you know, a happy meal type thing, which is not happy.
I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, those research studies show that you can have an almost immediate effect on inflammation, immune response, gut health, and so on. So, you know, 2/3 of our immune system lives in our gut. And these things that you were talking about, hydration, food, sleep, affects our microbiome, which affects our immunity, which affects all of our other chances of being a healthy, happy person in a not-so-healthy world. The reason I wrote the book, The Healthy Deviant, and the reason I talk about healthy deviance, though, is to emphasize that the majority of people that we are living together here in this society, in the United States, the vast majority of U.S. adults are not doing the things that they would need to be healthy and happy, both for the short term and the long haul. And that's putting our entire population at greater risk. You know, right now I mentioned, you know, having just one chronic illness or condition can increase your chances of a bad outcome by almost twice. And if you have more than one chronic illness, the factors just get worse. But right now, people with chronic illnesses don't represent a small outlier percentage of our population. They represent the majority. 6 out of 10 U.S. adults are suffering from at least one chronic illness.
And a lot of people are taking immunosuppressants, which are just, I didn't realize that until I was talking to you, that's kind of scary, that there's a whole class of drugs being prescribed for common conditions like arthritis that
yes.
are...
Yes.
So
that's a really, I'm really glad you mentioned that. And I remember we were talking about that. It was just something that had blown me away when I was doing some research for an article that I'm writing now about a healthy deviant response to coronavirus. I found this interesting article from the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. And really, you know, atomic scientists look at most pharmaceutical drugs are atomic in nature. They're dealing with little small molecules and things. But basically what they said was we have 10 million people in this country who are immunocompromised by virtue of having HIV. AIDS or being an organ transplant person, but that number is tiny compared to the number of people who are immunocompromised by virtue of taking pharmaceutical immunosuppressants, like Humira, for example. And I don't want anyone to stop taking a drug that they're taking. I want to be very clear
about
this.
We are not doctors.
We're not doctors. But most of the drugs that are given to folks with autoimmune conditions these days, many of the leading drugs like Humira function by suppressing the natural immune system of the body, keeping it from overacting, but also reducing its capacity to act. And again, I'm not a physician. I don't want to offer anyone any medical counsel, but it's important to note that biologics like Humira are now among the very best-selling drugs, the top-selling drugs in this country. And there are, you know, they've tripled in their popularity in just the past few years. So, this is representing a very significant part of our population now. And one of the points made by the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, which I tweeted out earlier, that article.
And you can find you, and people want to read that. You are on Twitter under...
At P. Gerasimo, P-G-E-R-A-S-I-M-O, my name. I also shared some things on my Facebook page, and I continue to share these things out as I find them because...
Oh, and you have a kind of clearinghouse at healthydeviant.com. So you're saying that you tweeted this link out.
And... Yeah, the basic takeaway was what happens in a pandemic when a significant percentage of the population is immunocompromised, whether by an underlying health condition like cancer or HIV/AIDS, or by virtue of the pharmaceutical drugs that they're taking, which increasingly, you know, it used to be very few people were on immunosuppressant drugs because, let's face it, organ transplants don't happen that often comparatively. But autoimmune diseases have been on a real crescendo in the past, you know, 10 years, in part because we've undermined our gut health, we've undermined our underlying vitality, and people are really escalating levels of stress, which put them at escalating levels of risk for these types of diseases.
That, my friend, is a spiral, because we have an escalating level of stress situation right now that we're all marinating in. All right, so we should touch on the food part of all of this. So here are things you can do to boost your immune system, boost the immune system of people you love in this dire time, is you can eat real foods. You can cook real foods for your loved ones. This sounds trivial. It sounds possibly such as eating broccoli for dinner is the most preposterous thing you could add to your life right now. But in fact, you know, it really does matter. All of those cruciferous vegetables, the broccolis, the cabbages, they are full of, you know, we don't even know how many compounds are in them. I think they stopped counting in broccoli at over 500. You know, there's just so many things your body can use in real foods.
Yeah, and a lot of which are anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, which is one of the key things that happens with disease states like this one, is that they send a cytokine storm, basically a very inflammatory set of downstream effects from infectious agents. And your body is having to fight those off with antioxidants and anti-inflammatory nutrition. I'm not saying that having a healthy diet is going to spare you from being infected with this thing. But I will say it definitely improves your resilience to any infectious or non-infectious disease state. So yes, healthy food, brightly covered fruits and colored fruits and vegetables, high cruciferous vegetables like the ones you mentioned are really important because they're sulfurous. They help to escort nasty things out of your body. You want to have high fiber. But all whole foods, all whole healthy foods are good for you. This is a great time, though, to take down your intake of junk. Fast foods, candy, pastries, refined sugars and flours. And I will say, too, if you know you have a sensitivity or suspect you have a sensitivity to, say, gluten or dairy or nightshades or something, good time to avoid that stuff. Don't push your luck.
Okay, so we got to take a break here. Actually, we got to say goodbye. Pilar Gerasimo, thank you so much for coming in to talk to me. You are always my port in a storm when I am kind of panicking, and you provide good sense. And I want, if everybody has one takeaway from talking to you, sleep, healthy food, and staying hydrated. These are not woo-woo nothings. These are important parts of caring for yourself and caring for the people around you. And you can go to healthydeviant.com, see all of Pilar's stuff. The book is fantastic. Thank you, Pilar.
Thanks so much for having me, Dara. Take care of yourself and everybody out there, too.
Dara here. I'm with you in the time of COVID-19. What a week. What a horrible week this has been. Though, of course, there have been good things, too. People helping each other. One of the problems that we're now looking at is, what if everyone stays home? What if we have a snow day for a month? What does that do to the economy? 1 in 10 jobs in America are in food and food service. Steph Schimp is one of the great food and food service people of our community. She runs a Blue Plate Restaurant Group. That is the Lowry, the Highland Grill, a Dining Grill, Groveland Tap. So many good local restaurants. And Steph Schimp is here to tell us what's going on. Steph, thank you for making time for us on a busy day.
Absolutely. Good morning.
All right. So tell me, what is Blue Plate Restaurant Group, your restaurant group you built from scratch? What's it doing?
Well, wow. You know, I sat down with my kids at dinner yesterday and just said, these are crazy times. I've never seen anything like this in 27 years. We've been through recessions, we've been through 9/11, we've been through snowmageddons and polar vortexes, and you know, this is just completely unknown.
What are you seeing? I've heard from another restaurateur in town, week to week, sales down 27%, she said.
You know, and it is trending down. We've had some, you know, so we have 10 plus locations, and they're all a little bit different. interestingly enough, the St. Paul stores are kind of holding steady. We've seen bigger dips, as you might imagine, right in the downtown area, where most of the financial services businesses are having their employees work from home. Sure. I think that's somewhat to be expected. But, yeah, we're seeing our takeout and delivery and pickup orders going up. And, you know, in the store, there's less activity.
Yeah, and so people, we're keeping a running list of how restaurants are coping, who's doing curbside takeout, this kind of stuff. You can find that at mspmag.com. We're going to be updating that constantly. But, Steph, so how are you handling this? What is your thoughts for your, because you're keeping hundreds of people. You're keeping roofs over their heads. What are you thinking?
Yeah, so, you know, we're just, you know, we're in uncharted territory. We're doing the best we can in terms of we are distancing our tables. You know, we're taking about a third of our tables and bar stools out to create social distancing.
Okay.
At first priority is to stay calm and make sure everyone feels safe. And that's employees and guests.
Okay, we've got about a minute to go, and I do appreciate you taking time. Mm-hmm. We hoped for more time with you, but the presidential briefing cut into that. And so you're putting social distancing opportunities into all of your restaurants. I know you're going to be doing more takeout. You know, I don't know how to support our economy. I know you're trying to figure this out as we go, how to keep roofs on everyone's head. We end up with a So
maybe we're going to have to make decisions, you know, on the fly, day by day. And, you know, my goal is like everyone. We want to be strong as a business and be here as a business when life returns to normal.
All right.
But I believe we are going to see reductions and we will likely see temporary closures.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, Steph Schimpf from the Blue Plate Restaurant Group, thank you for making time for us today. And everybody, support your local restaurants. Do what you can. Maybe you can buy a gift card. We want everybody to get through this as well as we can. And I will be here next week to give you more food in the time of Corona on Off the Menu.